actually that well thought out. I think it's trying to take advantage of an offer, but compared to the lot of thought and attention that's gone into by the community for partnership on affordable housing and the Westside Christian High School, I just don't think it's up there.
If I could put my two cents, and then we'll see what the the direction of the council for moving forward. I have to respectfully disagree with Commissioner Saltzman on the need and priority for a West Side emergency response or staging area for transportation. At least the bureau that I'm most familiar with, maybe it's because I live and breathe the status of not only the Willamette River bridges and their lack of seismic viability, potential lack of seismic viability in earthquake, but we also have overpasses, actually 157 other sort of elevated structures, transportation structures around the city, many of which are on the west side that are unreinforced concrete. So I think it's absolutely essential that we put in place some sort of emergency response staging area, communication center, backup center on the west side as soon as possible. Having said that, I like the approach put forward by Commissioner Fish, and unless there are objections, we've got a long agenda here, unless there are objections to Commissioner Fish's motion, do we have to vote on it?
Well, let me just for the record, because Keith's here, we'll just make absolutely clear that the two-week extension does not in any way negatively impact the time frame that you're operating under in terms of the BRAC process and getting back to DOD, correct?
Correct.
So noted.
And, you know, I just want to also be clear that while I think that Commissioner Leonard's concept in the abstract is a good one. Let's see if there's a win-win. If we can't find, you know, the right site under the right circumstances, I'm prepared to come back and move this ordinance. But I think we have a unique opportunity on this site to do something great with two great community partners.
We do, but I want to clarify my remarks because Commissioner Saltzman's observation is actually correct. I don't agree that Poem needs that site. I shouldn't have said that. I mean, you're right. We're building a site for them on the east side next to 911 Center. And I grouped that with what had been traditionally identified with wanting to go in that spot. My concept is exactly as Commissioner Adams expressed. We need a staging area for the Water Bureau and PDOT to have apparatus on the west side of the river, not a Poem. I only said Poem because they've identified that for an important site for the staging area as well. So we don't need, just to be clear, we don't need that site for the Portland Office of Emergency Management. We need it for the Water Bureau and the Portland Department of Transportation to have a site to put trucks in case our infrastructure collapses. So as people are thinking, and you need to do this very quickly, neighbors and Water Bureau and PDOT, thinking of what we need. What we need is something that can accommodate the affordable housing component that's the condition the feds say we have to erect on receiving this property for free. And I do think the financial incentive is worth doing this because we've all committed to having a west side location anyway for the Water Bureau and PDOT trucks. If we can do that at the same time saving $1.5 million by just maybe constructing it a little different than what we were talking about a couple weeks ago, I think it's worth the effort. So I hope.
And I just wanted to clarify, I didn't mean there's no need whatsoever for a west side staging for emergency operations. I just felt that this site has a higher and better use.
Commissioner Fish?
If the council is comfortable with a set over, the other thing I would say to, I imagine there's some people here from the neighborhood who are here to testify, and I've received a number of emails which have laid out thoughtfully some concerns about the impact of the affordable housing piece. I believe that Commissioner Leonard and I have accepted an invitation to actually come to the neighborhood and see firsthand some of the issues that you've raised. That includes the impact on a street that's on the backside of the proposed development. So people are free to testify on anything they want. I think in terms of the process, it might be helpful for us to set this over, postpone the testimony, take advantage of a site visit, and then come back in 2 weeks and have make a record if there is if there's an ordinance. That would be my recommendation.
So in 2 weeks, you're going to come back with a recommendation that may include another location for affordable housing in the west side?
Yep.
Yep.
It's not a current housing authority of Portland.
We don't know that. We haven't even surveyed to look. It may or may not have something available.
it doesn't affect the time frame, and it seems a reasonable request to at least consider those that option, and we'll come back in 2 weeks. But I would suggest that we ask the public to defer testimony today until we actually have an ordinance that's going to be acted on.
All right. So if I could try to get us moving forward.
I guess I just need one further understanding. Okay, with respect to Housing Authority of Portland, we heard last week they have significant properties in the west side already, and they need money to renovate them. So if we're not talking about this money going to renovate an existing affordable
correct.
Housing.
Correct.
This would be to
a wholly separate
additional.
A net increase is what I hear.
Okay.
A net increase.
Okay.
So is there something you're dying to tell us?
I just have one clarification that might affect your recommendation to us, is that there's going to be a difference between what HUD is going to require in the review. Sorry, David Chern from the Portland Development Commission. And what HUD is going to require in the review versus what council may require for request for the site. HUD is only going to look at the portion of the SEPA or HAP proposals that included provision of permanent supportive housing for homeless individuals. So for each of those proposals, that was approximately 10 to 20 units. And so the potential would be that HUD would only ask for a replacement of those 10 to 20 units, or provision of new 10 to 20 permanent supportive housing units off-site, not for completion of the entire development proposal that was put forward by SEPA that included the 60% MFI units and the ownership units.
So to get the property for free as it has been offered to us, we're required to do a homeless component, and that homeless component need only comprise 10 to 20 units?
Correct.
All right. Any other questions for the panel?
Well, I mean, I'm sorry, I know we want to move, and nobody more so than I, but I want to make sure we're clear on this. I am comfortable with meeting the requirements of HUD to get the property free and clear. I mean, I know there's an interest on developing the site, the four-acre site, that reflects the fabulous plan that we saw. But if we can actually secure the MoMA site for PDOT and Water Bureau, find a site that would do the 10 to 20 units that would meet the criteria necessary to have it bequeathed to us by the feds, I personally would be comfortable with that.
And just so I'm clear on the right, I would be less enthusiastic about it if we had that kind of erosion of the total number of units. But for purposes of our setover, we can just look for sites that could accommodate either.
Okay, that's good.
I think that's the way to go.
So there should be a clear incentive on the part of the residents of Multnomah to, in the next few days, to try to identify such a site that ranges from 10 to 20 units to the four-acre complex that we saw. Am I hearing a nod?
Well, there'll be a different set of Multnomah residents here.
Exactly.
When we pick the new site, we've done this before, but
it doesn't need it doesn't need to be in Multnomah. Doesn't it just need to be on the west side somewhere?
Outside of downtown.
Yeah,
I think it has to be.
So it doesn't necessarily have to be in even southwest. It could be anywhere on the west side, outside of downtown. Oh, it's up to us.
Yeah. I think for me,
can we be clear about what we're directing people to look for then?
Okay, so let me see if I can summarize. We're going to take 2 weeks, led by Commissioner Fish, to look for an alternative for the housing proposals. I'm interested in, some people are interested in just the federally required replacement. Some of us are interested in something that is more aggressive along the lines of some of the proposals that we received. And when we say the west side, we mean outside the downtown, which is traditionally I-405 to I-5 ring on both, the I-405 ring on the west side, portion of the ring on the west side. Commissioner Fish, do you want to clarify?
I think you did a good job. I mean, I remain somewhat skeptical we can get there, but I think that Randy's suggestion warrants an analysis, and I think we should do that. I'll work with PDC over the next 2 weeks, and then we'll come back and report.
Thank you.
So for those citizens, do you have anything to add? Thank you for your time up at the bench. Citizens have spent time out of their day to come down to City Hall, and we've got a long agenda here today. You've heard what we're up to, and I would suggest we take testimony. I'd like you to limit your testimony to no more than 2 minutes, and if you're absolutely positively you feel the need to do this, given that we are continuing it, then we will take your testimony. Carla? Otherwise, I'd ask you to refrain.
First three are Julie Barber, thank you. Okay. Julie Massa? Thank you. Arnold Panich?
I'd like to testify.
Okay. Go ahead, Arnold. Yeah, let's call two more.
Rob Edmiston?
Yeah.
Pass. Pass, thank you. Carol Unger?
Here.
Do you want to testify?
Okay.
You.
Come on up, Carol.
Come on
Carol,
up.
Come on up.
Lorna Ludwig?
Pass.
Thank you. Ann Bagwell? Martin Waugh?
Yeah.
Gilly Adkins? Valerie Morrow? Thank you. Paul Yarborough?
Pass.
Thank you. Karen Munford? Thank you. And Robert Munford?
As Carol makes her way, we would be continuing this to a time certain on July 9th at 10 a.m. All right. Welcome to the City Council. Please state your name, and you have 2 minutes.
Thank you. Commissioners, my name is Arnold Panich. I'm a board member of the Community Partners for Affordable Housing. I testified last time. I'm very, very much in support of your resolution that was written by Tom Potter and Commissioner Fish, and there are 14 whereases that justify this project. I'd like to read the first one that's very important to me, and that is that you follow the law in regard to the zoning of this. It is zoned, whereas the four-acre Sears site at 2730 Southwest Multnomah Boulevard is zoned R1 multifamily residential. That is the law. That is what we've agreed on over a very long process for zoning. Please follow the zoning ordinance and the zoning law, which is clearly in the best interest of the entire city and has been stated. One other of the 14 whereases, which are just wonderfully written, and I want to congratulate Commissioner Fish and the mayor for that. Whereas, given current rents and vacancies in Portland, at least 27% of Portland residents cannot afford to rent a market-rate two-bedroom unit, and that's someone earning the Oregon minimum wage of $7.25 per hour would have to work 76 hours per week in order to afford a two-bedroom unit. Whereas, in my opinion, zoning and the tremendous need require you to take the action. Let's not get dissuaded by the free offer. We have come to the table saying we will buy the property for whatever DOD wants. We have private investors who have come to the table with millions of dollars in tax incentive credit tax projects from the federal government. We're ready to go. We've got our architects in the audience here, and we want you to go with this ordinance as written.
So you don't want us to delay 2 weeks?
That's right.
All right. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Carol Unger, and I've lived in Multnomah since 1945. With our nation, state, county, and city economics in questionable situation, as it is and will probably remain there for some time, why would our elected officials vote to spend more monies to tear down the armory, spend more monies to rebuild, and spend more monies to maintain and support, when we have this emergency service plan that can utilize the west side, which is needed, and FEMA has approved this need? The existing structures of Sears Armory will remain, and our tax dollars will still be in use and not destroyed. Why, what have we become? A throwaway nation, state, county, and city? Is this why we now have a questionable economic situation? While I am unable to do your elected positions, I am able to see the simple economics to this situation. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Good evening.
My name is Karen Munford, and I just simply want to say thank you for your consideration and for the postponement that gives us time. And I wanted to know where we go from here. We've got a job cut out for us.
If I may, we're going to be here probably for another couple hours.
Okay.
At the conclusion of this, I'll confer with PDC mm-hmm. and some of our partners. Right. I've received a lot of emails from interested parties in the area. We'll come up with a protocol. We'll probably end up posting it on my website, okay. which is on the city website, mm-hmm. and then we'll try to act in an expeditious manner.
Very good.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony.
Sophie Yarborough? Come on up. Kay, is it Duche?
Yes. Okay.
Kate Dershey.
Sorry.
You're French. And, you're French today, Kate.
And Randy Bonilla. Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, hi. Good morning. Welcome to City Council. Please state your name, and you have 2 minutes.
Sophie Yarbrough, and I'm a resident that lives right behind the Jerome Sears facility, and I just want to thank you very much for listening to us. Only in this country, which I was not born in, can you have this kind of democracy. Thank you very much.
Thank you for testifying. Kate?
But just to include a couple of comments that I didn't get to make last time we were here, I would want to be sure that some of the folks who weren't able to make it this morning can testify in 2 weeks. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And the other thing is that I didn't get a copy of the resolution because my computer is down, and I might get it back tonight, but...
We'll get you a hard copy here if you could check with...
Okay, but just be sure that other people that are in the same condition I am do get a copy if they want it. And I want to be included in your walk around if that's what you are going to do, okay?
Thank Commissioner you. Fish has been very generous to personally deliver to your home copies of the
resolution. Thank you. No, one more thing. Dan, I'm so really upset by your comment that this was brought, that the communication center was brought in under the sly. No more sly than when you did when we were trying to pinpoint a place for Turning Point. So I voted for you, and I'll stand behind you, but don't make conditions on anything that says that we bring something in under the sly.
I said on the fly.
Okay, well, I heard it the other way, and I just wanted to be sure that was cleared up.
Let the record show he said fly, not sly. Thanks, Kate.
Okay, thank you.
We're going to continue this consideration of this resolution with the intervening process led by Commissioner Fish. We'll hear this again with public testimony July 9th, time certain, at 10 a.m. Unless there are objections, it's so continued. We're moving on to item 878.
Reappoint Jim Neal, Ted Savinar, and Carol Morse to the Regional Arts and Culture Council and appoint Alan Alexander.
These nominations are very worthy. They're reappointments. These people have been active members of the Regional Arts and Cultural Council. Attendance is very good. And do I have a motion to accept?
So moved.
I don't know if anyone wanted to testify. I didn't have a sign-up sheet, Commissioner.
I thought that was after the motions. No,
we usually do it first.
Okay, does anyone want to testify on item number 878? And do you need to read it, Carla? Or
did
you?
I did read it.
You did? Okay. No one to testify. It's been moved. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Commissioner Fish, would you like to second this?
Yes, I would.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. We'll now vote on item 878. Carla, please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Passes. We're now on Council Item 879. This is an emergency ordinance.
Pay claim of Linda Wickerham.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Commissioners.
Please state your name.
Randy,
state your name, and you have unlimited time to talk.
Thank you.
But we don't have unlimited time ourselves.
Indeed. I'll be brief. My name is Randy Stenquist with the City's Risk Management. This ordinance resolves a federal civil rights lawsuit brought by Linda Wickerham against the City Police Bureau and former Portland police officer alleging Fourth and 14th Amendment violations.
We've lost our quorum.
I think he's...
Commissioner Fish is here, but... He's over in the corner, so...
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Although the incident that gives rise to the lawsuit occurred in February 2006, the plaintiff did not file a claim or a lawsuit until after the officer involved had already resigned from the police bureau, given up his law enforcement certification, and pled guilty to official misconduct charges in October 2007. All of these actions by former Officer Konecki were unrelated to any contact he had with the plaintiff, Ms. Wickerham. The police bureau takes citizen complaints alleging improper conduct by its officers seriously. Within 72 hours of the first allegation of inappropriate conduct by a then unidentified officer, police supervisors had a team of detectives assigned to investigate. Once that investigation confirmed the identity of this officer, he was immediately taken off of the street to prevent any further citizen contact. The investigation continued, and the officer was placed on administrative leave. Shortly thereafter, in August 2007, detectives interviewed Linda Wickerham, who, for the first time, expressed concern about the manner in which she had been searched some 18 months earlier. She filed her lawsuit 3 months after that interview. Once served with the lawsuit, risk management began an investigation into the actions of the named officer. Based upon that investigation and based on the best information the city had at that time, risk concluded that Oregon law required the city to provide defense and indemnity for this officer. The city hired outside defense counsel to answer the charges against Konecki, and the city attorney's office has been representing the police bureau and the city. All of the parties involved in the lawsuit attended a judicial settlement conference in May with federal magistrate Judge Janice Stewart. In that day-long proceeding, Ms. Wickerham and her attorney agreed to a proposed $30,000 settlement, inclusive of all attorney fees and costs. Of this amount, the city will contribute $25,000, and former officer Konecki will pay $5,000. Risk management and the city attorney's office believe this proposed settlement is the most cost-effective way of resolving this litigation. Should the matter proceed to trial, the city can expect to incur significantly more legal expenses as well as the possibility of an adverse jury verdict.
Thank you, sir, for your explanation. Any questions for you from City Council?
I'm just curious, who's the attorney for the plaintiff?
Barry Engel.
Any other questions? Thank you. This anyone here who's signed or is anyone signed up to testify?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on item 879? If not, we'll proceed to the vote.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye.
Thank you.
We're going to go back to we just received the proposed amendments to council item 839. Are there any questions on the amendments that have been passed out in written form? Give you a second. Give council a second to read it.
I'm okay.
That's good.
All right.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. It's this amendment has already been moved and seconded. Is there anyone here that would like to testify on this amendment? Thank you for coming to the bench.
We should read it so people hear it.
Read it out loud?
Mm-hmm.
Carly, you want to read it out loud, the amendment?
Amendment? New finding, paragraph 13. 13. The council believes a one-year extension of the tax exemption would be appropriate to allow the council to examine and develop a more detailed policy regarding extensions of tax exemptions for affordable housing. Amend directive paragraph A. A, the request for an extension of 10-year tax exemption provided by Chapter 3.103 of the Municipal Code of the City of Portland, Oregon, and ORS 307.600-637 is hereby approved for a one-year period until July 30, 2009
Excuse
for
me,
the following property.
June 30th.
I'm sorry, June 30th, 2009 for the following property. The Hazelwood Retirement Community at 11933 Northeast Davis Street in Portland, Oregon. Property tax account number R170779. Amend directive paragraph C. C, the commentary in Exhibit A, Planning Commission's report and recommendation on the requested extension of the tax exemption granted to the Hazelwood Retirement Community relating to the background on tax exemptions for affordable housing is adopted as legislative intent and findings.
Is any discussion on council? Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on this proposed amendment to Council Item 839? If not, let's proceed to the vote.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Because it is not precedential, and we've made that clear, because the overall project does pay taxes, and this was done as an overall project at the time, and because the owner's willingness to do open books and because the City Council's policy isn't uniform or necessarily coherent, I vote aye. All right. Item 839 is approved by the City Council, and that takes us back to, I believe, item 880, second reading only.
880, amend intergovernmental agreement with the State of Oregon for placement of the new city archives on Portland State University campus.
Please call the vote.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
This is a very exciting project, and I look forward to being there when the ribbon is cut, I think September 09, hopefully with then Mayor Adams and Commissioner Fish and Commissioner Saltzman in attendance. Aye.
The Randy Leonard City Archives.
Has a ring to it.
Doesn't it have a ring to it?
A ring to it.
Aye.
Adams.
Okay. Randy, right. Is there some question about whether I'll be actually in service to the
there
city?
There is no
then?
Question. No question.
I'm not
I just
aware
met your
of,
schedule
not,
that day.
I'm not aware of any recall petition
yeah.
yet.
Yeah.
They still young. All right. Item 881.
Accept City of Portland post-retirement health benefits actuarial valuation.
All right. We have staff here to provide us the most succinct explanation of this item ever heard by the City Council.
Good morning, Commissioner Adams, members of the Council. For the record, I'm Ken Russ, the Director of OMF, and given the late hour, we will be brief on, I know how excited you are about the implementation of a new accounting standard.
That's right, I was up late last night.
This is a governmental accounting statement number 45, which we'll be implementing that deals with other post-employment benefits, which generally include health benefits, medical, dental, or vision. The City of Portland does provide other post-employment benefits in the form of health insurance, but we do that because we allow retirees to buy at our group rate. And that group rate, as we have implemented it under state law, does result in what is called an implicit subsidy, and that's the thing that's being measured under this accounting standard. So how much is our unfunded liability? The report in front of you this morning that has been produced by our consultants, Aon, shows that to be about $98 million. Will we be reporting that on our balance sheet? No. The standard says that if you continue your practice that we have as on a pay-as-you-go basis, each year you will begin recognizing a portion of that liability on your balance sheet. If you pay and fund all of your benefits as earned and any of your unfunded liability, you actually record no liability. So what are we going to do? We're going to continue doing, and my recommendation is to the Council, to continue to do exactly what we're doing, which is basically blending these costs and paying them as you go. Why would we do that? Because I'm not convinced that there's any money for the city to save to try to pre-fund these benefits. It's an extremely complicated little problem we have. The liability is not that great in the scale of our financial operation. I've talked with my colleagues across the United States. No one I know is pre-funding their implicit subsidy costs associated with these benefits. I don't think it's a large financial problem for us. That's my recommendation. We will continue to monitor that, and if we think there's an opportunity for us to save money and do something different in the future, we will. And that's the report that's in front of you.
Questions from the City Council for staff. All right. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on this matter? All right, then we can proceed to the vote on item 881. Oh, first I need a motion to accept.
So moved.
It's been moved and seconded that we accept item 881. Please call the vote.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. So approved. We're now on emergency ordinance item 882.
Change the salary ranges of non-represented classifications of senior engineer, supervising engineer, principal engineer, and city traffic engineer, and provide for movement on the range for current incumbents.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Commissioner. Anna Canowet, Operations Manager for Bureau of Human Resources. Patrick Ward is here with me as well. I'd also like to ask that we read ordinance number 885. It's a companion ordinance to 882, and have you consider both at the same time.
Unless objection, please read the ordinance title.
885, authorize a letter of agreement with the City of Portland Professional Employees Association to amend the July 1, 2007 to June 30, 2010 labor agreement.
Just those two?
Just those two, yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right. I will be brief. Just a little bit of background. With the support of their directors, the chief engineers from Water, Transportation, and Environmental Services came to the Bureau of Human Resources and asked us to look at the adequacy of our current wage structure for the engineering series in light of serious issues that they were facing in terms of both recruiting and retaining engineers. We did look at first the wage structure in comparison to the public sector, and our wage structure is adequate, but given the shortage of engineers that are coming out of the colleges and universities and the pressure from the private sector, we were convinced that what our current wage structure was standing in the way of our ability to recruit engineers. And in terms of retention as well, because what's happening is there's pressure on the bureaus to promote existing employees in that series in order to retain them. I should mention that management from the Bureau of Development Services was included in this discussion as well. Basically, what the ordinances do is they create a new compensation structure. It's built on the adjustments first to the represented classes, engineering associate, senior engineering associate, and engineer. The salary steps are adjusted by 3%, plus we added two more steps. That's actually the ordinance 885. Then 882 is proposing a similar adjustment of 3% in the range to the non-represented classes, senior engineer, supervising engineer, and principal engineer. Adoption of the ordinances allows this change to occur, including the letter of agreement that amends the COPIA contract to make that change. An additional change with the COPIA contract will eliminate what's currently an inequity that occurs if we promote an existing represented employee in the engineering classification to a new classification. They have to go to the top first step. If we hire someone from the outside, though, into one of those represented classifications, we have the ability to put them at a higher step. And so the letter of agreement with COPIA also basically fixes that and allows us to promote existing employees to a higher step as well. We think this is a very important step, although not the only step, in addressing what's an ongoing problem in terms of our recruitment and retention of engineers, but is important. This is also an excellent example of really productive work between Bureau of Human Resources, the Operation Bureaus, and the City of Portland Professional Engineers Association to address this problem. So we are asking you to adopt the ordinances. Patrick Ward's here if you have questions. Mark Bello, president of COPIA, is here if you have questions of him. Susan Bailey from the Water Bureau can talk about some other recruitment issues if you're interested. And then Darren Kipper, principal engineer, is here as well. But only if you have questions.
So questions from the City Council to staff. All right.
Yes.
Hearing none. Is there anyone here that would like to testify on Council Items 882 or 885? Seeing that no one has come forward, these are emergency ordinances. So,
yes.
Carla, would you please call the roll?
882. Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 885.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Thank you. So approved. We're on item now 883, which is also an emergency ordinance.
Authorize a letter of agreement with Labor's Local 483 to amend the July 1, 2007 to June 30, 2010 labor agreement.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Commissioner Adams. I'm Patrick Ward with the Bureau of Human Resources. Agenda item 883 amends the current labor agreement between the city and Labor's Local 483 for the recreation bargaining unit to permit seasonal recreation support employees to work up to 1,200 hours in the calendar year. At present, the labor agreement limits employees to 860 hours in the calendar year. This change would permit these employees to work the same number of hours as other seasonal employees in the city under the recently amended Human Resources Administrative Rules. The Bureau brought this forth. Local 483 is in support of it, and we recommend passage.
All right. Any questions from the City Council for staff? Anyone here in the room that would wants to testify on agenda item 883? Seeing none, Carla, will you please call the roll?
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Good work. Aye. That gets us to emergency ordinance, Council Item 884.
Authorize a letter of agreement with District Council of Trade Unions for terms and conditions of employment of certain employees in the Bureau of Environmental Services assigned to perform inspection work inside of the East Side Combined Sewer Overflow Tunnel during its construction.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon again. I'm Patrick Ward of Bureau of Human Resources. The agendas, the reading of the ordinance clearly describes what this ordinance will do. It was brought, the only item I have to add to this is that this request was brought forth by the Bureau of Environmental Services Labor Management Committee as an issue to address a requirement that the employees have to wear specific safety shoes while working inside the tunnel. Recommend passage.
Any questions from the City Council for staff? Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify in this matter? Carla, please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Potter. I'm sorry. Adams.
Aye. All right. That gets us to Council Item 886, which is a report.
Authorize a price agreement for LED modules for traffic signals to Advanced Traffic Products, Inc. for the Office of Transportation for an estimated amount of $2,130,000.
Good afternoon, Jeff. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Tell us what this is about.
Good afternoon, Commissioner Adams and members of City Council. I'm Jeff Baer with the Bureau of Purchases, and this is a requesting authorization to execute a five-year price agreement for the LED modules for the traffic signals. And the vendor that we're awarding this to is Advanced Traffic Products out of the state of Washington. They are in full compliance with their equal benefit requirements. We did a competitive selection process, and by way of an invitation to bid, we received three bids. They're the lowest responsible bidder, of which we are awarding it to. The initial amount, actually over the five-year term of the contract, we expect to spend roughly about $2.1 million. The initial one-year period is going to be the bulk of those purchases, upwards of about $1.8 million, and then roughly about $70,000 a year. So we have a representative from PDOT here in case there are questions.
So there's underline and strikeout on the attached. Are you aware that there's an underline and strikeout on the attached? And what's
no,
the,
I'm not. I don't
what's
have
the status of the underline and strikeout, which I've never seen before.
I don't have that on mine, so
I just did that on your copy to see if you were paying attention.
Hopefully, I passed.
You passed.
You see down there in the last paragraph.
Yeah, I'm not sure why that's in there. That's an error, I would say, because we still need the option to extend for up to four additional years. So that should not be in there.
So it's just, we'll let the legislative record note it's a Scribner's error.
Correct.
Okay. Any other questions from the City Council for staff on this? Anyone in the audience that would like to testify on Council Item 886? I need a motion to approve.
So move.
A second?
Second.
It's been moved and second. Approval of 886. Carla, please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. That gets us to Council Item 887. It's an emergency ordinance.
Authorize agreement with five neighborhood district coalitions to support civic participation services for neighborhood associations and individuals within their target areas from July 1, 2008 through June 30, 2010.
Good afternoon, Brian. How are you? Good
afternoon, Commissioners. Commissioner Adams. I'm Brian Hope with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, manager of the Neighborhood Resource Center. And the Office of Neighborhood Involvement is excited to ask for your support of these grant agreements to provide financial and limited staff assistance resources from the City of Portland to these five nonprofit district coalitions: Central Northeast Neighbors, Neighbors West Northwest, Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods, Southeast Uplift Neighborhood Program, and Southwest Neighborhoods, Inc. And these grants will provide services by which the people of Portland may effectively participate in the civic affairs and work to improve the livability and character of their neighborhoods and the city. And these organizations, along with the two city-managed offices, East Portland Neighborhood Office and North Portland Neighborhood Services, are critical partners working with ONI to implement the five-year plan to strengthen community involvement in Portland. This is the roadmap created by Community Connect and adopted by City Council back in February 27th of this year, which includes three goals that have a number of recommendations, the goals being increasing the number and diversity of people involved in their communities, strengthening community capacity, and increasing community impact on public decisions. And why we wanted to take this opportunity to give check in with you on progress we're making. We've been busy with these district coalition partners over the past several months, crafting an updated grant agreement that responds to these goals and the numerous recommendations in the five-year plan. And the agreement in your hands reflects a more comprehensive listing of the functions that are commonly expected of all the district coalitions citywide. For example, some of the functions, several examples are such as fostering networking and collaborations between neighborhood, business district associations, and other diverse community organizations, and promoting effective communications to keep the community informed about issues, opportunities for involvement, and ways to plug in into their communities. So I was hoping to be able to just show you a couple examples of highlights to show successes of how neighborhood groups have been using additional resources that council has supported in the last several years. For example, helping strengthening community capacity. A number of you have been very supportive of the Neighborhood Small Grants Program. This is $200,000 per year new resource to help with community building, attracting new membership, and sustaining people who are already involved. In the first year, 92 neighborhood groups, business, and community groups were awarded grants ranging from $400 to $4,700. New additional leverage dollars were in the amount of roughly $683,000 that these different grantees reported to us. 38% of these awards went to underrepresented community organizations identified as serving people of color, immigrants and refugees, low-income communities, youth, and people with disabilities. And just one example, the Woodstock Neighborhood Association got a grant for $3,500 to help organize their third annual neighborhood picnic last summer. The funds supported more than 800 volunteer hours that led to 1,200 people who attended that neighborhood picnic to enjoy live music, local food, and games. And organizers said the additional funds were instrumental in increasing participation, especially among new younger adults or parents with kids in the neighborhood and minority community members. And a quote that best exemplified the community building spirit of neighborhood association efforts. One participant said, "I met the Girl Scout troop at last year's neighborhood picnic and have been volunteering with them ever since." Another key area was around promoting effective communications. With your support, you provide an additional $95,000 per year to the district coalitions for communications to encourage community members to become more aware and engaged with their neighborhood association activities. And some of the ways these funds have been put to use, three coalitions are improving or initiating community-wide newsletters, expanding content, redesigning layout, and increasing distribution. Four coalitions are improving or creating new coalition websites that include interactive calendars, blogs, news groups, and increasing server capacity to handle more neighborhood association content, such as neighborhood meeting minutes and agendas. And I wanted to share you one example. The Northwest District Association utilized these funds to organize a social event this spring. Brought in over 120 participants, resulting in 75 new members who signed up, many who said this was the first time they'd ever participated in a neighborhood association event. And this event would not have been possible without these additional communication dollars to insert a flyer in the Northwest Examiner to get more people there.
That was a great event.
You were there.
I was there.
And I believe former Mayor Bud Clark was, I heard, dancing on the tables at that event.
I had left before the police were called, but yes.
Dancing. You know what happened?
Move to strike.
You know what happens in Northwest Portland should stay in Northwest Portland.
So, Brian, I apologize. We've got some meaty stuff in front of us. And suffice to say that what you're bringing forward to us in terms of the additional specificity of the expectations between the city and the groups and the success that you've had putting to great work the money that the council has provided for these grants programs, I think, has been stellar. Is there any final thoughts that you want to share with us? Again, I'm sorry for...
We appreciate your support, and we'll continue to look at how we can implement the five-year plan.
Great. Thank you very much. So is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on the emergency ordinance, item number 887?
CC Hewley Noel signed up.
Cease. Good afternoon. How are you?
Thank you. My name is Cease Hughley-Noel. I'm Executive Director of Southeast Uplift Neighborhood Coalition, and I just wanted to let you guys know that this new grant agreement is really exciting. It's had considerable community support. It's been an iterative process that has continued the community process that we started with Community Connect, of which I was chair of that group. And we're really glad to see that this particular grant agreement provides more consistency across the coalitions, across the districts, to provide this level of service to all of the 95 neighborhoods in the system. We're really happy to see that it provides greater specificity and accountability for the goals that we're trying to all reach. And we're really glad to see that it is implementing the five-year plan, because this first grant agreement is pretty foundational to moving forward with those, making those goals sustainable. That's all.
Thank you very much, Cease.
You're welcome.
All right, if there's no one else that would seek to testify and there's no further discussion from council, let's have a vote.
Fish?
I just want to comment that one of the features of Community Connect that I like is the opportunity to broaden the base of participation
of folks in the neighborhood level. We have neighborhood associations are not meant to be perfectly democratic organizations that mirror in some scientific way the community, but I think through this process we're going to get a broader base of participation, particularly among underrepresented groups, and I think that will be of enormous benefit to us as we go forward in updating the Portland plan. Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Brian, I just want to underscore our thanks to you for all your good work, and Amalia and the entire team at ONI. Aye. All right, that gets us to a series of six. We have six council items, 888 through 893. They're all second reading, which is a vote only. But there might be some discussion on council, so what I'd like to do is to have Carla read the titles for all six, and then we'll have whatever council discussion there is to have before we move to actions, unless there's objection.
I would like to make a motion after it's read.
Okay.
888, approve the First Amendment to the Lentz Town Center Urban Renewal Plan to expand boundaries by 140.05 acres, increase maximum indebtedness by 170 million, and extend expiration date to June 30, 2020. 889, approve the 28th Amendment to the Downtown Waterfront Urban Renewal Plan to remove 47.03 acres from the planned area and standardize plan amendment process. 890, approve the 10th Amendment to the South Park Blocks Urban Renewal Plan to remove 3.20 acres from the plan area and standardize plan amendment process. 891, approve the amended and restated River District Urban Renewal Plan to expand boundaries by a net 41.98 acres, increase maximum indebtedness by approximately $325 million, and extend expiration date to June 30, 2021. 892, approve the First Amendment to the amended and restated River District Urban Renewal Plan to expand boundaries by 8.53 acres and increase in maximum indebtedness by $19 million.
So to put some shape to council discussion, is there any, before we get to an amendment, are there any overall comments on the package, and then maybe go through them individually? Any overall comments on the entire package?
Well, my motion does relate to...
Relates to 892, is that right?
891, 892, and 888. The River District plan amendments and the Lentz urban renewal area.
Okay, any overall comments? I didn't hear any, so Commissioner Saltzman.
I'm sorry, again, what does your amendment refer to? 888?
891, 892, and 888.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. This past Wednesday, we heard quite a bit of testimony on these urban renewal areas, and in particular about the satellite district proposed for the River District to provide funding for a much-needed new elementary school in the David Douglas School District. And, you know, I have support and I continue to support the need for us to find a way to help David Douglas build this new elementary school. But it also became increasingly clear to me that, and to do it on a timeline that had meaning, it also came increasingly clear to me that although the satellite district has always, you know, been risky, I guess, from the outset, that perhaps it was moving to the point where the calculated risk was going to result not in a school for David Douglas on a timeline that's appropriate. And what I felt we needed to examine were another way of getting there. And after hearing the testimony, doing some research, what I want to propose for the council's consideration is that we look at a way that would establish the David Douglas District as a contiguous element of the Lentz urban renewal area, so therefore removing the whole satellite issue. And to do so, and ask PDC, the Planning Commission, and the public to take a look at a proposal that would fund the David Douglas Elementary School and would also hold harmless all the other elements that the Lentz Urban Renewal Advisory Committee has worked very hard to put into that plan. Now, it may be a daunting task, but then again, it may not. It's something we never looked at as part of the Urban Renewal Action Group, which I served on. It's an option we never even examined. And I think that if we give ourselves 6 weeks to examine this option and have PDC come back to us in 6 weeks with two options, in essence, one would be to establish the David Douglas School District site as part of the Lentz Urban Renewal Area, and the second option would be the current proposal to make it a satellite district of the River District. And let us make that choice, let us make an informed choice about this in 6 weeks. And I feel that, as I said, I think the satellite district is approaching a risk level that leads me to believe we're not going to be serving really adequately the families and the school children of David Douglas, that they will be, in fact, held hostage to, as I said in a memo I sent last week, to lawyers, legislators, and lobbyists, and that this issue could be tied up in courts for a long, long time, and that doesn't serve anybody's interest.
So if I could, Commissioner Salzman, just clarify what you're proposing. You're proposing that for council items 888, 891, and 892, that those be held over for
held over
6 weeks.
August 6th, yes.
Till August 6th.
I'd like to speak.
And to come back with two options on the David Douglas school site.
I would, for the purposes of discussion, second the motion, but only so that I can persuade my colleagues to kill it. And I think it deserves a discussion given the energy that's surrounded this topic. So for the purposes of discussion, I will second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Commissioner Leonard.
This has been a troubling series of concerns that have been articulated by some of the developers in the River District. Since I first heard the arguments, I find within the arguments some amazing contradictions. And just to begin ticking those off, this whole argument that the satellite district is some new concept that is risky legally is amazing. The Portland Development Commission itself created the Willamette Industrial Urban Renewal Area, which is in fact two non-contiguous URA districts that do not touch each other. This concept was actually born out of that, and I didn't notice anybody raising an objection to the Willamette Industrial URA at the time that was conceived and passed by the council. It's interesting to me that the only time that objections to that kind of a urban renewal area are raised is when we are going to build a school for a non-Portland public school, albeit a Portland school within the city limits of Portland, specifically David Douglas. I went to the Portland Development Commission hearing and sat through nearly 4 hours of various testimonies was disappointed at what some of the opponents to this characterized this project as. One of the lead opponents made some passing reference to the PDC and the City Council authorizing building some school in East Multnomah County with downtown urban renewal district dollars. When I got up to testify, I offered to give him a ride along with his colleagues out to east of I-205, which apparently they've never been to, and actually observed that there's actually a city that belongs to Portland beyond I-205 all the way out to as far as 174th, and that David Douglas School District, far from being an East Multnomah County School District, is a school district wholly within the boundaries of the city of Portland. And this argument that the other side has used, that apparently Commissioner Saltzman is concerned about as well, that the David Douglas site that this school is going to go on does not meet the definition, the statutory definition of blight, is funny if it weren't so serious for the kids out there. The argument is that the David Douglas School is not blight, but apparently the Pearl District is. And apparently, you know, places like the Henry in the Pearl District are blighted occupancies, which are amongst the most expensive housing in the city. So how you can argue on the one hand that the Pearl URA deserves to be extended because there continues to be blight, but somehow an area of the city that doesn't have sewers, that doesn't have sidewalks, that has some of the lowest income residents, not only in the city but the state, is not a blighted area, as I said, it would be funny were it not so, the consequences not so serious. And this issue of why would we do that in the first place? Well, there is a nexus between why we would build a school for the poorest kids in this community, albeit 15 miles from the URA, that the source of the funds are going to come from. And here's the nexus. The neighborhood I grew up in, which at the time I grew up in the 60s in it, was a neighborhood analogous now to those neighborhoods that are in East Portland that are very economically distressed. As we invoked programs such as Model Cities, which was followed by urban renewal areas, and they succeeded, the families that historically were living in those neighborhoods could no longer afford to live in those neighborhoods, and they moved out, guess where? To David Douglas. So the success of urban renewal in the inner city has impacted David Douglas and Park Rose and Centennial and Reynolds school districts in the city because they have had to provide the school for the families who can only find housing in those areas due to the success of places like the Pearl and Irvington and other inner city urban renewal areas. So the nexus in my mind is clear. It is clear that when we achieve success in otherwise blighted areas of the city that historically have been neighborhoods that the most low income of our residents can afford to live in. And as they become economically displaced, they move to places they can afford to live, which happens to be David Douglas, Park Rose, Centennial, and Reynolds. Those school districts are noticing an explosion of students. At the same time, Portland Public Schools is noticing a deflation of students, a loss of students. And that's easily understandable when you understand that on the positive side of our urban renewal success, we have a dark underside. And the dark underside is families without means have no place to live in the inner city anymore. They just don't. They can't afford to. So David Douglas is then stuck with having to provide an adequate education to students who come from very poor families, who oftentimes live on streets with no sidewalks, who oftentimes live on streets that aren't even paved. And for those who haven't been out to the east part of Portland and seen what that's like, I am seriously happy to take you on a tour of streets that you will be shocked actually exist within the city of Portland, where kids can't ride their bikes, where families can't walk down sidewalks, where it becomes really impossible to have safe routes for them to get to the schools, which once they arrive are overcrowded, and quite the opposite dynamic that we're seeing in Portland public schools. So I guess I would conclude my remarks in urging my colleagues not to support Commissioner Saltzman's proposal this way. And there's two points I'd want to make. If you have any doubt at all whether this is legal or not, I urge you to give the benefit of the doubt to the poorest kids in this community. not to those who are succeeding in their investments in the waterfront urban renewal area. And second, to get very specific about Commissioner